Morning, Chairman. Chairman, is it correct that a majority of the directed proxies were cast against the proposed Alinta transaction last December?
Sorry, can you come again, Stephen, please?
Is it correct that a majority of the directed proxies were cast against the proposed Alinta acquisition last December?
Jeff, can you elaborate? That was not the case.
Right, because in your statements at the time, it talked about mixed views from shareholders and the board's decision. But the fact that you pulled the meeting 24 hours after the proxies had closed certainly left the impression with me that the shareholders had taken the decision, that the shareholders had actually, majority had said, no, we don't want that. So I thought it would be important just for us to know what the proxy position was. So are you saying that if the meeting had proceeded, the transaction would have been approved, but the board took a decision not to proceed with something which the shareholders had decided to approve? Is that the situation? And can you give us the specific proxies if you've got them to hand?
There was always opposition to from some security holders, but the majority were in favour. We haven't disclosed that figure, but we were pretty confident that the proxies would have carried the decision in the day.
Pretty confident.
We know that
because usually it's pretty clear cut. 99% vote by proxy.
It is clear cut.
So yeah. It was dead certain that the deal was going to go through.
Correct.
Right. Okay. In terms of the ongoing relationship with Singapore Power and the model and the structure that we have, there's certainly a lot of negative market sentiment about the third-party infrastructure model at the moment. Jeremy Davis is the director of Transurban. Transurban has walked away from the model of borrowing to pay distributions, adopted a more conventional arrangement. We're paying out about $220 million a year in distributions. Our net profit was $157 million last year. I know the comment was made about the cash flow covering the distributions, but we are still paying out a very high proportion of our profit in distributions. Obviously, our share price has suffered somewhat. There is $40 million of management fee leakage heading off to the Singapore parent, which a lot of investors don't like. So I guess it's a question as to whether we should be reviewing our structure and reviewing the model in light of what is going on in the broader market and in light of the decisions of other companies to adopt a more conventional, internally managed structure, not borrowing to pay distributions, getting the debt down, and being more conventional in the overall way that we conduct this company. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Means, for your comments. I will try and respond to you and I will ask my fellow directors to add after I've completed. First of all, as you are aware, we are a highly sort of a regulated and very stable business with security and stability in our cash flows. And 100% of our distributions are funded from our cash flow from operations. So we are able to maintain our forecast, as mentioned by the MD earlier on, of the distribution growth for 2008-09 financial year. Now, you mentioned about the change in the structure and cash flow. I think the board as a whole will ensure that SP AusNet is managed in a financially prudent way. And we will continue to ensure that we are well capitalized to ensure that we have the right financial structure, credit rating, etc., to ensure that we have a viable business commercially and financially going forward. Now, you got any comments to add? No?
I might just add a couple of points, Chairman. Stephen, the $40 million fees that you refer to, a large proportion of that, in fact, only $18 million relates to the performance fees. The rest are reimbursement of salary costs, which whether you do it internally or externally really has no consequence. They're passed through from a regulatory point of view. I guess our view is that as terms of a fee to a manager, it's probably one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in the market at 0.75% of market cap. And there are some very significant hurdles that need to be ticked off to achieve those. So they're under the direction of the Audit and Risk Committee. So they're very, very independently assessed, and those metrics really mean that if the manager gets a performance fee, security holders have got the same, a parallel benefit. The other thing I would mention in terms of our growth and capital, the regulatory arrangements here assume that we gear appropriately at about at least a 60-40 debt equity ratio. So by default, as we grow, and capital growth in this business is good because it's adding to the sustainability of the business, there is an implied need to borrow for that capex. So, but as the Chairman's mentioned, our distributions are funded by operating cash flows.
And this might be one for perhaps Mr. Quek or one of the Singapore Power representatives. I'm just interested in the financial strength or stability of our majority shareholder and manager. I had a look on their website last night. We don't seem to have any financials for the most recent period, but I think pre-Alinta, Singapore Power had $9 billion of debt. So assuming the $8 billion is totally debt funded, we're talking $17 billion of debt within Singapore Power. Now, Singapore Power only operates in two markets, Singapore and Australia. I'm just curious as to why Singapore, the nation, has gone more into Australian electricity and gas assets than seemingly any other asset class or country around the world, and whether the current level of investment and the current level of debt at $17 billion, if that is correct, is sustainable. Why hasn't Temasek brought that debt down? I mean, it's gone on a multi-tens of billions of dollars spending spree. It's down $7 or $8 billion on its investment in UBS. The global financial crisis has dented Singapore's net value to the tune of tens of billions. And its biggest play is down here in Australia in terms of Australian energy. And there's this public company sitting here with Singapore as the parent, which wanted to flip another $8 billion into us. So can you give us some insight into what is the thinking at Singapore Power? Does it have too much debt? Is it under pressure to maximise distributions coming out of SP AusNet to service that debt? Or is it a long-term, happy, stable shareholder and Temasek could write out a cheque for $10 billion and just fix that debt tomorrow because they're so strong and there's no problem? So I'm interested in the strength and the financial stability of the parent company and whether that situation is driving any of the decisions that get taken at SP AusNet. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. It's a very wide comments and questions that have been raised. I will give you a response and I'll get Mr. Quek to add to that. I think 2 points first. Financial prudence is key to our management of our operations as a group. So we'll ensure that we are financially stable, strong, and viable. That is point number one. Point number two, SP has its own board and management. We make our own decisions as a company. Temasek does not direct us in our management and operations. And whatever we do, it is management that evaluates. The board will then endorse its decision if necessary. So I want to put that point straight. In terms of our financial standing and credit rating, I can tell you that it is an important part of our prudency in our financial management. But I'll allow Mr. Quek, as the CEO of SP Group, to elaborate a little bit more on this. Go on.
Thank you, Stephen, for your questions. Maybe I'll take it one at a time. I used to be in Temasek before, so I've now been running Singapore Power for the past, I think, 5 years. I'd like to just say that Temasek is our shareholder, but it has its method or its code of corporate governance of looking after or allowing its companies to run on its own with independent boards and independent management. As any shareholder, they would always be interested to make sure that their companies are managed in the best financial condition, and they would want the company to stand on its own, independent, and giving them a returns as any shareholder would want to. So when you say whether Temasek is able to support SP, they would do so as any shareholder would do so, but they wouldn't want to be a crutch that the companies can depend on. So we have been managing our, SP has been managing its finances, its balance sheet, to its best of abilities as an independent company. And our financial standing, our financial credit rating allows us to go to the market to refinance the debts that we have incurred in making our acquisitions. So they stand ready. If there's a need for us to strengthen our balance sheet, if there's a need to restructure our balance sheet, we would have to go to our shareholder, as any company would do so. But at the moment, I think SP is able to, I would say, digest the acquisitions that we have made. Now, why do you ask, why have we come to Australia? And I think it is a testament to how good the business climate is in Australia. I think we are in a very regulated environment. We have a stable regulatory regime which has a reset policy, which is, I think Australia is the energy structure that Victoria has put in place, I would say, is a model that most other countries in the world are trying to emulate. So it is a testament to our view that Australia has a good business and legal and regulatory environment for us to make investments. So that's why we are in Australia. I think I can only point to all the refinancing transactions that we've announced in the papers for SPIAA, single SPI Australia Assets, which has just recently announced this week that they have managed to refinance the debt with the banks at a very competitive rate. Singapore Power does so also in the world markets, and we have so far been able to convince institutions and banks that we have a good business, and they are prepared. And they have confidence in us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Just a last contribution on general business. Lino made the comment that we're still having discussions with Singapore Power about potential cooperation or synergies. I'm just interested, I mean, it's a pretty unique situation we have at the moment where we have not only the shareholder having 100% of a certain bunch of assets and 51% of another bunch of assets, but the parent shareholder, Singapore Power, also being the official manager and getting paid fees to manage SP AusNet. So it's from a governance and operational point of view, it's a pretty tricky situation we have here. And I'm just interested as to what actually is being talked about at the moment. I mean, do we have, for instance, an independent board committee in place actively examining, revisiting the transaction in some form, or is the discussion at the moment just on potential management synergies and a lower level of cooperation? Do we have, for instance, a formal financial advisor? Is someone actually representing us and talking to the parent? And maybe one for Mr. Quick, is it fair to assume that the transaction wouldn't be revisited in a way that would cause Singapore Power to suffer a book loss? So we're not going to see a situation where $8 billion becomes $6 billion or $5 billion, which is probably what the market would value those assets at now, given the state of the market at the moment. So is it fair to rule that out? We're not going to see. Singapore Power is a long-term investor. They don't need to roll over the asset. We're not going to see that happen. And can that be conventionally ruled out? I know Temasek dropped 90% in ABC Learning in a year. Obviously, it's pretty embarrassing to do that. And you wouldn't want another big admission of a big bad investment in Australia. So is it fair to rule that out? And exactly what are you talking about at the moment? I mean, you know, how high level are these current discussions?
Okay, before Nino provides you with the colour and the details of what is being talked about, Mr. Quek on SP's position, I would like to say that as this is a related party transaction, all right, between SP IAA and SP AusNet, the highest standards of corporate governance is in place and continues to be practiced as always. We have an independent, we have an audit and risk management committee, which is chaired by Mr. Tony Anello and comprises a majority of independent directors, looking at all proposals for SPIA and SP AusNet working together to derive a value through synergies for both parties. So I can assure you, Mr. Mains, that the higher standards of corporate governance will continues to sort of govern this, if you will. So with that, I would leave it to Nino to elaborate a little bit more on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairman. Stephen, there's no transaction per se. The synergies and opportunities we're looking at are very operational. It's really between the at this stage, between the management of the companies, although we're keeping our AusNet board informed of progress. But it's around things. We use a lot of partners in everything that we do, and we're looking to see if there's opportunities around procurement or other operational activities that we could jointly benefit from. Now, you're right, it's complex because it's related party, there's trade practice. So we're very cognizant of doing things appropriately and making sure that we're not in breach of any requirements that we should fall subject to. But they are quite operational. There is no transaction per se that we're undertaking.
What?
Thank you, Stephen, again. As you said, this is actually a very unique situation that we have, and I'm glad that you appreciate how unique it is and how tricky it is. But I think everything that SP does has always been consistent with what we said when we launched SP AusNet IPO, that we have the intention of making SP AusNet our investment vehicle for all investments that SP makes in Australia and New Zealand. And we continue to subscribe to that, and that was why the attempted, or as you said, the transfer of the acquisition of the Alinta assets gave us the opportunity also to allow SP AusNet to have the opportunity to purchase these assets from SP. But so be it, it did not take place, and now, I mean, SP is a long-term investor in Australia. We believe that we have got excellent assets in the acquisition that we made of the Alinta East assets, and we think that we still are confident of the growth opportunities that these assets present to SP. So we are a long-term investor. We have no intention at the moment divest any of these assets, because we believe in these assets, and we are going to make sure that we realize the potential that we saw in these assets when we made the acquisition. I think whatever we do, as I said, will be scrutinized very carefully by the market, and SP is aware of this, and we will be abiding by the best practices in transparency and corporate governance and independence of the AusNet board. Thank you.
Yep. Stephen, I might just add for clarity, when we say they are all operational works, but we actually, as an additional level of governance, we are reporting that through to a subcommittee of the board of the independents and Dr. Lefroy, who are reviewing it to make sure that it is in the best interests of all security holders. that there's an additional level of governance on that.
Chairman, that was very interesting. If you strip out the Singapore power votes from Jeremy's resolution, about 57% of the independent shareholders have voted against his re-election. So clearly one or both of the proxy advisory houses have taken a position. I suspect it's not anything to do with Jeremy personally. I suspect it's to do with the question of this number of independent directors and the fact that he's a Singapore Power representative. I sort of disagree a little bit with Tom's comments that if Singapore Power owns 51% of the stock, they are entitled to a majority of the board seats. I think that's actually a reasonable proposition. And I think what we have seen last year was one of the great demonstrations of how independents should represent minorities in related party transactions, in that we had a deal that looked okay, we had independent advice, and then we had the independents step up and say, no, we've changed our mind. I'd be interested in hearing from Ian on this as to what was it that actually caused that, because I think he and the other independents deserve to be congratulated for that decision. We have dodged the bullet here. Was it the size of the proxy position, Ian, where I'm presuming it was maybe 40-45% that were against, or was it just the markets? But well done on that position. I think that was, in hindsight, a great example of how independence should work, and therefore I'm a little bit surprised that the proxy advisors have taken a set against Jeremy, because I would have thought the system actually worked quite well and it worked as it should work. And maybe the argument is that three independents is not enough and we should be up to four or five, and Singapore Power should be up to five or six. So we still have a majority situation. But from my point of view, it worked well. And I think that it's a good example. And I'd like to hear from Ian as to what actually happened in that last week that caused him to make that very important stand. And also, what was the formula by which all of the directors were given their, not bonus payments, but their special payments because of the extra work associated with the transaction? So I think page 203 of the annual report points out that there was 277,000 of extra payments to the directors because of the Alinta workload. Ian got the biggest whack of 70,000, which is fine. I think we all accept he chaired the committee. But what was the formula there? Like, effectively, you had a Singapore Power-controlled board deciding how much the independent directors would be paid to exercise their independence. I mean, you've cost Singapore Power a lot of money, Ian, with your decision. And are they deciding how much extra you get paid? How was that formalised in terms of those payments? Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Means, for your very wide comments. Before I pass the floor to Ian, I would like to say that, as you rightly pointed out, the Independent Committee of Directors independently reviewed, analyzed, studied the transactions, and came to its own conclusion, and recommended, you know, based on its decision to the board, not to proceed with the transaction. Now, as you pointed out, this is a clear demonstration of corporate governance working, and you know, it's good corporate governance at that. Now, before I pass the floor to Yen, I would like to comment on your point on this exertion payments, as we call it, to the directors. We had a tremendous amount of, I would say, work, and many meetings were held beyond a normal call out duty, if you will, for the directors, as well as members of the special committees that were tasked to study, to analyze, and to evaluate the transaction from various perspectives. And it is therefore appropriate that these members of the board who are engaged in all these activities are additionally remunerated to me on a token basis in recognition of the extra efforts, time, which they put in evaluating and assessing the transaction. And in terms of the payment, we took into account market practice and the sort of payment and was duly and extensively evaluated by the Remuneration Committee. So due process was also being practiced. And I must say, all right, on my part, that I deeply appreciated the contributions and efforts and the time spent by all the directors who were engaged in those transactions. So, as I say, the sort of additional payments were just a token recognition, very token recognition of the efforts and time that they've put in. And I think it's well deserved. So maybe, Ian, I can give it to you now.
Well, I'm very happy to disclose to you some of the events of the second half of last year, which were etched very deeply in the minds of every director of SP AusNet. Can I start off by reminding you that when SP AusNet was floated in the original prospectus, it was stated that it was the desire of the company and of our parent SP that oil and gas assets, electricity and gas assets in Australia and New Zealand would preferably be within SP AusNet. That was the point of the float, that we were creating a company that would concentrate in this area and, if it had worked out, hold the SP Group's interests here. So when SP proceeded through SP International to buy that part of the Alinta assets, SP honoured that undertaking by giving SP AusNet the option to buy those assets at the same cost that SP had paid. So we were offered the chance to buy them at the same cost that SP had paid, plus the out-of-pocket expenses that SP had incurred, which was very fair and reasonable and fully in line with the original intention. We then, that's we, the independent directors, hired advisors, the full gamut of financial and legal advisors, to assist us. And that we did, and after very careful examination, we decided it was in the interests of SP AusNet to proceed with the transaction. It was not a 100% to nothing decision. It was quite a difficult one, but in the end, on balance, we thought it was the right thing to do. And in that booklet that you received, our reasons were set out at vast length. Now, between the time we made that decision and the booklet was issued, which was in September, and the actual time of the meeting, which was in December, a lot of things had changed. One thing that had not changed was the shareholder, security holder sentiment, and as Stephen has elicited from the chairman, in the end, the vote by, and of course SP, the parent, did not have a vote. The vote of the independent security holders was narrowly, but it was in favour of the transaction. Notwithstanding that, we decided, that's initially the independent directors, but in the end all the board unanimously decided not to proceed with the transaction. That's because the assumptions on which we'd made the decision had changed. We had decided to go ahead based on certain interest rate assumptions, certain cost assumptions, and that therefore implied an assumption about the price which we could get in further security holders to help us finance the transaction. We could have got it away, but at interest rates and security prices, which made, in our view, the difference between this being a good transaction and not a good transaction. So with a great deal of disappointment, and not without a bit of agony, we decided that we could not support the transaction. We said that to the full board, and to their great credit, all the directors agreed with us, and they could see that from SP AusNet's point of view, that was the right decision. A disappointing position, no doubt, from SP's point of view, who are now left with this difficult situation of having the two groups, the 100% owned assets and the 51% owned assets, but nonetheless, it was the right decision. And there was a cost involved, you're right. That was an unavoidable thing, and we took that into account when we decided to go ahead. That was one of the factors, thinking this will cost a lot to examine, and if it doesn't go ahead, that's a cost that our security holders had to bear. And that weighed very heavily with us. But we decided it was worth, the possible upside of the transaction was worth it, but we had not foreseen the dramatic move in the credit markets, particularly in that last part of the transaction. Can I also comment, you've asked a number of questions, Stephen, about the way the independent directors work, the non-independent directors work. There's a board of nine here, so if you set aside the managing director, that leaves eight. Of those eight, four are SP people, four are not SP people. Of the four who are not SP, Tony Ianello, Martin Meyer and I are independent directors, and George Lefroy acts like an independent director, but he was once an SP director, and under ASX listing rules, there has to be a three-year gap between ceasing to be an SP director and becoming independent. So he's working out his time, and George will be one of our independents with about a year to go. But I can assure you, he sure acts like an independent. So from my point of view, there are four plus the managing director who have absolutely the interests of all the independent shareholders here in mind. So I think I can only say from my personal experience, this is a matter I'm deeply interested in, I think it works pretty well. As the ASA rep said, this is a very complicated company, it is, and the call on the independent directors to exercise their duties is greater here than it might be in most other companies. But through us having a majority of the audit committee, a majority of the compliance committee, and also when there are specific items come up, like the revision of the MSA that we'll be looking at soon, we have an ad hoc committee and look at that. We are scrupulous in always ensuring that any issue that comes up where the interests of the parent and ourselves are not the same, independent directors meet separately on that and make a recommendation to the full board.
Thank you, Ian. Stephen, I hope that gives you a flavour of how independence works in SP. But I just like to have a little note to what Ian has mentioned. Although there are four SP nominated directors on board, non-independent directors, so to say, we as directors of SP AusNet have our fiduciary responsibilities to SP AusNet. And to that extent, we act in the best interest of SP AusNet and its security holders. There's no other way, no two ways about that. So I hope that further adds to the elaboration explanations given by Ian.
Chairman, I think I made the comment last year that Nino was probably the lowest paid CEO in the top 200 companies on only a miserable 680,000. So I notice he's up to 1.5 million this year, so you know, I'll give you my business card later and you can send me a case of Grange. My question is just, I've got no complaints. 1.5 is very, very moderate in the context of Australian CEO salary, so I have no complaints about the level of executive pay at SP AusNet. Just my one query, was there an element of, like the directors got the extra money because of Alinta, was there an element of payment for the extra work on Alinta in that cash bonus? And then I also mentioned earlier that the fees that get paid to the management company of $40 million in total, and he said that the non-performance element of that was to pay salaries. So I'm just curious as to how that works. There's a figure in the accounts of $22 million that supposedly is paying salaries. Then there's a figure for Nino of 1.5 in salary and cash bonuses. Is that, I mean, how do those two work? Is there a double counting there? What salaries are being paid out of the performance fee, or are they separate managers somewhere else? So how do those two things actually work with pay at this company?
Okay, I will maybe get the chair to talk about the details. But before that, I think your figure of 1.5 million for Nino is grossly overstated. That includes his sort of long-term incentive, imputed so-called value, which may or may not be realized. Am I correct, Nino? Jeff, will you please elaborate on that?
Thanks, Chairman. Firstly, just comment on the 1.5 million that Nino is there. Let me be clear. It's fairly clearly spelled out in the remuneration report that his base is $569,000. The bonus was $600,000. The superannuation was $41,000. And there was an equity component to his package, which I think probably is still to be earned out under the LTI. So that's how the 1.5 million is determined. We have to calculate it that way because the accounting standards require that sort of reporting. Unfortunately, it's not quite what we get in our pockets. There's an earn out component that's associated with that. Chairman, just going back to Mr. Main's comment about the amount in the performance fees that relates to wages and salaries. There's some $22 million that was paid last year, and that is related to mainly to wages and salaries. In fact, part of the MSA adjustments that we're proposing later on in this meeting are really to adjust that, and I'm sure that that will be talked to in a minute. But all of the wages and salaries and the short and long-term incentives are paid from that pool. So there is no double counting, Mr. May. What happens is that reimbursement of people who are SPI management employees, which is myself and Nino and approximately 90 other people, are paid from that pool of funds, and that is a direct charge through to SP AusNet.
Can I just add another point, Stephen? The bonus for Nino and his senior management team, for the financial year just ended, included a once-off special bonus for their efforts, which they expended, extra efforts which they expended in relation to the Alinta transaction.
Finally, Chairman, with your grace, just noting, Mr. Main, one of the reasons why you compared a higher figure last year to this year is that it does include the LTI, and you might recall last year there was no LTI in those figures. So no long-term incentive was included in what you had as the prior year comparison.
Thank you.